We've been working on some memory passages that, you know, as I've said, when you look at the Sermon on the Mount, it would be well if we could just memorize the entire thing. And I'm not saying that would be beyond most of your capabilities, but it would be a real challenge for me. So I've picked out a few passages. Matthew 5:16, and I think it's just really great how it ties with our lesson tonight. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. All right? We want to live lives that glorify God. Also, Matthew 5 and verse 20, for I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, we've added a passage, Matthew 6:33-34. Again, if you know it, say it. If you don't know it, read it. That I think encapsulates the real thought of the entire sixth chapter. But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. Let me clarify something I said. Matthew 6:34 is not as much, it's more that last little section. But I think 6:33, and we'll talk about tonight a little bit, it's what the chapter is about in so many ways. How many times have you heard somebody say, preachers, these chapter divisions are artificial, they're man-made, and usually that'll be said at a point where they're saying it's a bad division. Well, tonight, as we begin a new chapter, I think it's a perfect division. You know, if you're going to have a book divided into chapters, and it does make it a whole lot handier for reference. Chapter 5, beginning, I think, at verse 21, introduced by verse 20, I believe, has challenged us, challenged his audience to truly love their neighbor, to exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees who they knew you couldn't murder. You couldn't commit adultery. But Jesus challenged them to a true love that would even expand to include their enemies. And it's a real challenge, as we've been talking about. I hope we're really accepting the challenge that, okay, I don't murder. I don't even hit anybody. But do I say words that hurt people? I would never cheat on my spouse. But am I really loyal in my heart? Do I tell the truth? Am I honest? All these kinds of things that he's challenged us. They're tough. Chapter 5 presents to us a picture that's not easy. But I would say chapter 6, it gets even harder in many ways. It's really coming down to, it's not as controversial a chapter. You go through chapter 5, you think about, we've got questions about divorce that oftentimes generate controversy, a lot of questions. Things about the swearing, the application of, turning the other cheek and loving your enemy. Chapter 6 is not as many controversial, difficult questions. It's not as hard, I don't think, to understand. But it's hard to live because it gets at the very root of maybe one of, if not man's greatest problem, one of his greatest problems, and that's pride. Chapter 6, in so many ways, is an attack upon our pride, our self-sufficiency. Think about the opening of the sermon. What was the first beatitude? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Those who, and remember we talked about, that's the man, the word poor there is a word that signified a beggar. the lowest of the poor. That's the way he started it off. The second beatitude was, blessed are those that mourn. And I believe very strongly, he's not just talking about those who've, well, they lost a loved one somewhere along the way, so they're blessed. Well, everybody loses loved ones. Everybody suffers tragedies, but some of them are not blessed. You know, they're not going to be comforted. It's that mourning for sin. I think the sermon starts off this way, and now he's coming back to it. He's coming back to the idea of the poverty of spirit, the man who's not self-sufficient. And, you know, you look at number two, which is part of our memory verse. What does he say the disciples are to put first? God's what? Kingdom and righteousness. Now, when we get to Matthew 6:33, we will discuss kingdom and righteousness a little more. Tonight, I want us to focus on first. This chapter is about first. You know, you think about what's the real key to exceeding the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, that is, being right before God. Is it never speaking an angry word? Is the key never lusting in your heart? Staying married all your life? Now, those are things God requires. But those are all applications of the second commandment. What was the first and great commandment? Think about, love God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, your strength. What does that leave? That's loving, that's giving God your all. It's first. This chapter is first things first. I think it's easy for us to see that when we get to, obviously we get to 6:33. Seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness. But isn't that really what the whole chapter is about? I would say, you know, there may be little asides. When Jesus begins on prayer, He kind of expands the topic of prayer away. But most of this is about what is first. Pride. And you think about, there would be so many ways he could have dealt with pride. But he chooses to deal with it in connection with charity, with prayer, with fasting. The kinds of things that would seem to mark out a true disciple. Here's a true disciple. He's kind. He gives to other people. He prays. He fasts. Going to tell us, you know, if you're not careful, pride will ruin every one of those. That's, you know, don't we have a tendency, I don't know, maybe you don't, but I think, I know my life, and I think in the lives of others, there's sometimes, we just have a tendency to want to go down the checklist. Well, you know, I did this. I didn't do that bad. I didn't do that bad thing. I did this good thing. I didn't do that bad thing. And Jesus in this chapter says, you did all these good things, and you did them for the wrong reason. It doesn't count for anything. That's sobering. Yes. No, I said that position of some has been, the interpretation of some has been that the turning the other cheek applied only to persecution. And I was saying that by that, if I walked out of here and somebody jumped me and jumped me because I was a preacher of the gospel, then according to that position, I allow that. But if I walk out of here and it's just a robber who wants to take my empty wallet, then I can, you know, in the words of Martin Luther, I can cut his throat. No. He argues that he says that if it is compatible with the eternal good of a person, that you could engage, you know, which I think he would be opposed to the killing of any. I'm not sure of all that he would say. I think he would probably say, you know, if somebody, there's no distinction between whether it's for robbery or for persecution. I think that that would be what Brother Earnhardt would say. But say, you know, if somebody jumped on you and you could physically restrain them, you know, stop them from rendering harm, you know, that, you know, it is not to their eternal good that they commit an act of murder. And if I could stop them, I would, you know. If it involved, if necessary, you know, restraining them, I would seek to do so. But I would not, I don't carry a gun, you know, and I'm not going to dispatch somebody to meet their judge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I have no opposition to a self-defense that does not involve my taking the place of a judge and, you know, being the one to send them to meet their maker. You know, I would rather them kill me than me kill them, because I'm ready to go to heaven, and I doubt they are. You know, I think I would. I say that. You know, I mean, that's easy to say. It's not, you know, easy to do. But you know, would I pop the guy in the nose if he tried to, you know, was trying to kill me? Yeah, probably. Would I pull my knife out? No. You know, my knife, it would probably bruise him. It wouldn't kill him. But I wouldn't pull, you know, and I may be wrong in all of that, but I would try to prevent him committing further crimes. I will go back and reread that, but I believe that he is saying he has to reject that position because we cannot always know the motives of people in that, I believe. All right. Yes, real quickly, because I got to move on here. I'm going to run. But go ahead. Well, go ahead. If I think it's a dumb question, I'll just tell you, Marshall. Okay. All right, let me give a quick answer. The question of combat and war is a long, involved question that involves a lot of things. One, I think the Ten Commandments was you shall not murder. And even though, as I said Sunday, I do not believe a Christian ought to participate in the killing of warfare, I do not consider that murder at all. I do not believe a soldier is a murderer. You know, I personally feel like he's doing something that is beyond the teaching of the New Testament, but it's not murder. You know, and as far as the Old Testament, my quick answer would be that Israel existed, they were a spiritual and a physical nation. You know, God's people today, God's Israel today is a spiritual nation that has no boundaries. God's nation today is American, it's Chinese, it's Brazilian, it's people who are, we would be enemies. I mean, folks that we consider enemies of the United States have Christians within it. And so I think there's a large distinction, you know. And my other answer would be Israel, they went to war when God told them to go to war. They didn't go to war, you know, just on their own. But, you know, it is a difficult question. I mean, there's probably not anybody here who's either not served in the military or had family members or folks who've, you know, had to face the question of being a conscientious objector back in draft days. But anyway, okay, real quick. Go ahead. Not directly. Let's go to Matthew 6. The war question, you know, is one that, as I said, look, I said only about a fourth of what I would normally say about it if I were dealing exclusively. Sunday, we were talking about loving your enemies, you know, and I'm saying I think that applies there. I'm not, you know, trying to get into all of it, but I don't want you to think I'm trying to cut you short, anybody. You know, I'm already behind. Yeah. Let's read together, folks. Matthew 6:1-4. Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. Therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But when you do a charitable deed, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your charitable deed may be in secret. And your Father, who sees in secret, will himself reward you openly. And when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Jump to verse 16. However, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. But you, when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face so that you do not appear to men to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Here he's telling us, the enemy, anybody remember the comic strip Pogo? Anybody? Set in the Okefenokee Swamp, Okefenokee is an Indian word, means lots of mosquitoes and too many alligators. I think land of trembling earth. Pogo, one of the most famous lines from Pogo is, we have met the enemy and he is us, you know. And that's chapter 6. is pogo all over again. Who's the enemy? It's us. It's our pride. It's our self. And so I ask you to define pride. If you looked it up in the dictionary, you saw a whole bunch of definitions. What is pride? Anybody? Vainglory, that's good. You're doing great. Keep going. I'm going to, it's thinking too highly of oneself. It's, I love when you go to the dictionary and it says pride, and you define it, the sense of being proud, Then you go to proud, and it tells you something about pride. I'm like, I think we're going in a circle here, folks. The high, the inordinate opinion of one's dignity, importance, merit, or superiority. Proud, feeling pleasure or satisfaction over something regarded as highly honorable or credible to oneself. Pride is one of those, it's kind of like beauty, that you might not be able to define it, but you see it. You say, there it is. We know it when we see it in others. That's one of the easiest things to do. Is you can see, boy, he, she's filled with pride. It's not so easy in ourselves to see sometimes. Humility, the opposite of pride. What is humility? Not arrogant. If pride's thinking too highly of oneself, then humility is not thinking too highly of oneself. I think humility and submission go together. Meekness, gentleness. You see a lot of the words that partner up with it. Is humility thinking of oneself as incapable of doing anything? No. Now, that's not humility. Paul said not to think too highly of oneself, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one measure of grace, Romans 12. And he goes on to say, if God's given you this ability, use that ability. But it's about self. And it does affect our dealings with others. There's no doubt about that. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But it's really about God. All things should be to God's glory. It is God who gave us life. It is God who brought salvation in Christ. It is God who gave us this book. If I can preach a lesson, teach a class, it is by the ability God has given me. The woman that, whips up the greatest meal ever. Well, God blessed, financially to have the food. God bless the ability to do these things. All of this. Now, that's not just. We have to take and develop the abilities God uses or gives us. In the parable of the talents, they were given. And that's so confusing, isn't it? Because talents there means money. It doesn't mean abilities. But the talents were given according to the abilities. They were expected to use that. What the master had given them. We have to use these things. But so often, what he's saying here in this sixth chapter is in the very acts that ought to glorify God, our pride ruins it. You ever seen a preacher that could strut like a peacock? I'm glad I started to wear my Jerry Garcia tie tonight, and I did, and it's a good thing. Song leader. One time I was in a congregation, and that was a group we had the song leader for Sunday morning. Now we had multiple song leaders for Sunday night and Wednesday night, but we had one man that always led on Sunday morning. Well, he started on Sunday nights. He would visit. He was just visiting around different churches, and some of them very unsound churches. Well, it was brought up in the men's meeting. We didn't have elders. The men's meeting. We don't need that. And so he was not going to be the song leader anymore. And his mother, somebody said the next Sunday, said, just leaned up to his mother and said, why isn't John leading singing today? And she said, they dethroned him. And I'll tell you, that said, it spoke more truth than she realized. That's how that whole family saw it. That he had a throne. He was powerful. He had a position. And it gets into us. You know, elders are warned, don't lord it over the flock. What a great work. But pride, and yet, think about the person on the other extreme that constantly says, I'm just nobody. I can't do anything. I'm just worthless. Who is that person thinking about more than anybody else? They've got an eye problem too. The whole point of this chapter is it's just not about me. When we have eye problems, we have problems. You know, get that out. You know, I found this lesson was probably one of the hardest for me to prepare. Now, as I've said, chapter 5, it's got some tough stuff to wrestle with. You know, trying to figure out exact applications of the loving your enemy, turning the other cheek, what the swearing section, you know, what some of these other, but this one deals so much more in abstract, you know, in just a general attitude and principle. And I'm the kind of guy, I just like a 1, 2, 3. You know, I like this step, that step. And this is attacking really attitude. Verse 1 starts off, take heed, New King James, that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Most newer translations give the rendering that you do not do your righteousness before men to be seen by them. Suggesting, this is the introductory principle, and then three applications: money, prayer, fasting. And you know, that may be very fair. But just think about what you've got in verse 1, verse 2, verse 5, 6, verse 16. And this is question number 5. How are we the light of the world that people are supposed to see our good works? And then he turns and he says, you know, when you get ready to pray, get in the closet. Don't let anybody know you're fasting. Is there contradiction between these two chapters? And I know, you know there's not. Brother Paul? All right. It's about motive. It's about emphasis. It's about purpose. You know, why do I do this? You know, and I know, you know, Christians go out to eat in a restaurant. And there are Christians, some that have been uncomfortable praying in the restaurant because, well, they say, well, you know, we ought to, you know, we don't want to do this to be seen of men. Well, if you're thinking about, you know, let's you know, excuse me, everybody in here, y'all be quiet. You know, we're going to have prayer. That would be a clear violation. And I'm getting ahead of myself for, you know, the next lesson. But, you know, why did I do that? You know, why do we pray? Because we're just thankful for the food. And if people see us, they see us. If they don't see us, that's well and good too. I don't care about them seeing me, that they do. It's just about motivation. And what does he tell me in verse 1? If I do things to be seen of men, what's the consequence? Pretty serious, isn't it? Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. You know, it It really is. And look at number 6. God resists whom? Proud, but he gives grace to what person? Humble. Isn't. And Brother Earnhardt has a great little discussion of how easy it is to get caught in the trap of pride. Because, you know, after all, you know, most of us have come a long ways. And I don't mean just ignoring the, you know, what you may have accomplished in the financial, educational, social realm, spiritually. You know, most of us, you know, in our lives, we've made great progress from where we once were, and so it's real easy to you know, be kind of proud of that. And then you go, oh, no, I can't be proud of that. I've got to be humble. And then you just kind of say, well, you know, I look at those proud, arrogant folks, and I'm not like them, you know. And then all of a sudden we begin to be kind of proud of how humble we've become. And as he said, you know, then we catch ourselves, and then we're kind of proud of how quickly we caught ourselves. And pride is sneaky. Now, I don't think it's one of those, you know, the old story given about the guy that got the award for humility. They were going to present him with an award for being humble, and then they took it away because he came up to accept it. You know, I think you can be humble and know you're humble. But I'm still saying, it's sneaky. It comes up on us and so quickly. And we've just got to understand, if we're doing things to be seen by men, no reward in heaven. If we're filled with pride, God's against us. I don't want God against me. You know, I want God on my side. I want to be the one who's more than a conqueror, as Romans 8:37 says. So I've got to be careful. Give him the glory, and it's so easy to say to God be the glory, and at the same time thinking, but he had a pretty good helper along the way, you know. No, give God the glory and appreciate, you know. Pride, number 7, pride produces what? According to Proverbs 13:10. Contention, strife, some translations. You know, proud folks, they want things their way. They don't listen to others. They treat others, you know, as beneath them. Or, you know, they're always getting their feelings hurt. You know, I mean, people don't appreciate how smart I am, how good I am, how talented I am, and we get our feelings hurt. If we're not thinking about self, it's hard to get hurt so much. And that's what, it's really just got to just lose ourselves in serving God. And just, what do I want? What do I want for this church? What do I want in my life? And that goal, the aim, is just to be perfectly to say, I want this church to honor God, to follow God, to love God, to spread God's message. And sometimes it becomes, I want this church to have this many people and, you know, this amount in it. And we begin to think in human terms of things that build pride, and we you know, I want this, and it's so easy to let yourself even, look at what we have next, charitable deeds. I hope you looked at number 8 and you took the time to list the passages. You could have listed dozens. Charitable deeds are a key thing in the Bible. But he says, you start blowing that trumpet. He said, that's what the hypocrites do. I doubt he means that the hypocrites literally took a trumpet and went, woo, you know, blew it. But they made sure everybody knew it. They made sure folks knew what they were doing. And he says, oh, they have their reward. You know, when people see it and pat them on the back and say, oh, what a wonderful, caring soul he is, that's it. They're done. There won't be a reward from the Father. On the other hand, when you do charitable deeds, not letting your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Now, is that technically, literally possible? No. But isn't he saying here, and not only are you not doing it to be seen of men, you're trying to do it not to be seen of yourself. Which you technically, I mean, obviously we can't literally do that. But, you know, I snuck over and I slipped that poor widow $100. Nobody saw it, just me and her. And all the way home, I'm going, you know, that was a really nice thing I did. I helped that lady out. I bet nobody else helped her tonight like I did. You know, that was a lot of money for me. I don't have much money. And I'm just telling myself all, nobody. He said, you've ruined it. And which, I'm not going to say none of, some of you probably never have. But I know I've been guilty of these things. And when I have done a charitable deed privately, I've also privately thought, I hope somebody finds out about it. I helped out, Joe. I hope Joe will mention that to somebody along the way, because I've blown it. Now, here's where it kind of gets interesting to me to think about. This difference between letting your light shine and, as Brother Huggins put it, shining your light. You remember a man named Joseph, Acts chapter 4? What did the apostles change his name to? Barnabas. Why did they change? What did he do the first time he comes to light? Now, he'll be seen a lot of other times. No, what did he do? What brought him to light? Yeah. He sold property and gave the proceeds. He was seen doing that, right? Did he, in a sense, get glory from men in that the apostles recognized him and appreciated him? I'm bringing this up because I want us to understand this is not a prohibition against ever being seen doing good or being so kind and so charitable that over time people can't help but notice it. But Barnabas didn't do it to receive glory from men. He did it because there was a need, and he wanted to meet that need. And the key is just do the right things for the right reasons, and God will be glorified. Over time, people can't help but notice. But they'll notice that you're not blowing a trumpet. You're not patting yourself on the back. You're not going around acting like, well, I'm better than anybody else, because they'll notice the right things about it, and God will be glorified. Barnabas is a great, he's a great study in a lot of ways. Really is. As I said, and maybe it's just my inadequacies, but trying to wrestle with this was one of the most difficult for me as to how to present it, because, again, it's not a matter of, I can just tell you, okay, when you go to give somebody money, make sure, you know, you do it this way. That's not the point of the chapter. The point of this chapter, I'm convinced, is just lose the idea of this is all about me. This is about God. And always keep before you the realization that the best things you do in life can easily be perverted by pride. You know, the very next, what we'll look at next is prayer. I mean, there's nothing more pious than prayer, is there? And it can be corrupted. Okay, we'll start our study of prayer Sunday morning.